Today is Tuesday, the 6th of January, 2026, and you are listening to the World Socialist website. Five years since Trump's January 6th coup, Patrick Martin, January the 5th, 2026. One day after the fascist-led mob, summoned to Washington by President Donald Trump, overran the US Capitol on January the 6th, 2021, the World Socialist website wrote that the attack was, quote, a turning point in the history of the United States. The hoary glorification of the invincibility and timelessness of American democracy have been exposed as a hollow political myth. The popular phrase, quote, it can't happen here, taken from the title of Sinclair Lewis's famous fictional account of the rise of American fascism, has been overtaken by history. Not only can a fascist coup happen here, it did happen here, on the afternoon of January the 6th, 2021. The correctness of that assessment is clear in what has transpired over the past 5 years. On January the 6th, 2021, Congress convened to certify the Electoral College vote confirming the victory of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. What was supposed to be a constitutional formality became the target of an organized operation to overturn the election by force. A mob of several thousand marched from the White House at Trump's command, stormed through lightly held police barricades, and assaulted the Capitol. Organized paramilitary forces, above all the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers, forced their entry through doors and windows and spearheaded the attack into the building. Subsequent prosecutions established that leading figures were convicted of seditious conspiracy and related felonies aimed at preventing the certification. The violence was severe and sustained. More than 140 police officers were injured during the assault. The political objective was intimidation and coercion. A gallows erected outside the Capitol was not a grotesque prop, it was a declaration of intent. Trump's own Vice President Mike Pence and Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi narrowly escaped capture. Had leading officials been seized, the coup would have acquired the leverage it required, through execution or hostage-taking, to compel capitulation and impose a political outcome the electorate had rejected. January the 6th was not a spontaneous eruption. It was the culmination of a conspiracy that developed over months and gathered momentum as the inauguration approached. The House impeachment report, produced immediately afterward, documented Trump's course of conduct in the months leading up to January 6th, including his efforts to pressure officials, summon supporters to Washington, and direct them towards the Capitol. Trump was at the center of the plot. He attempted to compel state officials and governors to reverse certified results, most notoriously in Georgia, where he pressed the Secretary of State to, quote, find enough votes to overturn the outcome. When these efforts failed, the conspiracy converged on January 6th, a plan to block certification, create institutional paralysis, and use violence to block the transfer of power. The most damning feature of January 6th is not only that a coup was attempted, but that it came so close to success and encountered no organized political resistance from the Democratic Party. As the assault unfolded, Democratic leaders did not call on the population to mobilize in defense of democratic rights. Senators and representatives fled and hid. There was no appeal for mass action, no call for a nationwide mobilization of the working class, and no effort to transform public outrage into active resistance. Biden's response during the coup attempt was not a summons to the people, but to issue an appeal on national television for Trump, the coup plotter-in-chief, to call off his own forces. The Democrats feared above all that a genuine mobilization against a coup would rapidly take the form of a broader social eruption, an opposition that would escape their control and assume a direct anti-capitalist character. Their, quote, defense of democracy was constrained from the outset by fear of legitimizing mass struggle from below. The coup did not fail because democratic institutions proved, quote, strong. It failed narrowly through the inexperience, logistical errors, and operational incoherence of the conspirators, combined with their inability to secure decisive leverage quickly enough. The deployment of D.C. National Guard was delayed for hours. Testimony and documentation describe a roughly 3-hour and 19-minute gap before the National Guard arrived at the Capitol. That delay provided precisely the window in which the coup could have been consolidated. The outcome would likely have been different under only slightly altered conditions. Had the mob succeeded in taking even a single prominent Democratic senator or representative hostage, the Democratic Party would have moved rapidly into negotiation under conditions of terror in the name of stability and national unity. The Democrats' conduct during the attack itself demonstrated that they had neither the will nor the program to prosecute a genuine struggle against dictatorship. Far more important to the Democratic Party than defending democratic rights was maintaining, quote, bipartisan unity for the strategic priorities of American imperialism, above all, escalation of confrontation with Russia. Even in the immediate aftermath of January 6, Biden and Democratic leaders insisted on the need for a, quote, strong Republican Party, signaling their determination to restore the very political instrument that had enabled Trump. The Democrats' governing orientation was to secure Republican collaboration on foreign policy, war appropriations, and the expansion of the national security apparatus, while suppressing any independent political mobilization of the population. The record of the Ukraine war underscores this class logic. The Biden administration repeatedly sought vast funding packages and relied on, quote, bipartisan mechanisms to prosecute the proxy war against Russia, culminating in major congressional passage of a large Ukraine aid allocation with significant cross-party support. In practice, quote, defending democracy at home was subordinated to the requirements of war abroad. The Democrats' collapse was most exposed by their conduct in the 2024 campaign and its aftermath. During that campaign, leading Democrats declared that Trump was a fascist and that his election would mean dictatorship. Yet when Trump won, they accepted the outcome passively and did nothing to build resistance to the incoming regime. Their warnings functioned as electioneering, not a strategy for stopping dictatorship. It was necessary to ensure a, quote, smooth transition. After Trump returned to office, the normalization accelerated. Trump's early actions included blanket clemency for January 6 defendants, pardons and commutations issued as a presidential proclamation. Investigations that dragged on for years were then shut down or neutralized in the wake of his electoral victory. Special Counsel Jack Smith, who is now the target of legal persecution by congressional Republicans and Trump's Department of Justice, told the House Oversight Committee last month that Trump clearly planned the January 6 coup. Quote, our view of the evidence was that he caused it and that he exploited it and that it was foreseeable to him, Smith said. If the Democrats truly believed their own claims that Trump's election would produce dictatorship, their obligation was to mobilize mass resistance. Instead, they offered procedural formalities, rhetorical gestures, and a posture of resignation. Because genuine resistance would require the very thing they absolutely opposed, the entry of the working class into independent political struggle. Over the past year since his return to power, the Trump administration has implemented a systematic conspiracy for dictatorship, which is to accomplish what it failed to achieve on January 6. This has taken the form of deployment of National Guard troops to American cities, the vicious assault on immigrants, open defiance of the courts, the criminalization of political opposition, and threats to invoke the Insurrection Act. The invasion of Venezuela and kidnapping of President Nicolas Maduro are open gangsterism. Trump's declaration that the United States would, quote, run Venezuela following the operation marks a point of no return. His language dispenses with any pretense of legality and replicates the criminal military operations of the Nazi Third Reich. These actions are inseparable from the internal trajectory of the regime: impunity for the coup plotters, political persecution, rule by decree, and the normalization of violence as state policy. The fundamental conclusion follows inexorably. The defense and revival of democratic rights is impossible without a fight for socialism. The Socialist Equality Party is fighting for the development of a new base of mass resistance to dictatorship. This is bound up with the development of the class struggle, animated by a clear anti-capitalist perspective. What is required is not a, quote, broad coalition behind the Democratic Party, but the independent political mobilization of the working class against the oligarchy and its state. That means centrally the systematic development of rank-and-file committees in factories, workplaces, logistics hubs, schools, hospitals and neighbourhoods. These organs of democratic working-class self-organisation are critical. They provide the practical means to break the grip of the corporate bureaucracy, unify struggles across industries and regions, defend immigrants and targeted communities, and transform scattered anger into coordinated action guided by a socialist program. This fight must be taken forward in 2026. The lessons of January 6 and what has followed must be burned into the collective memory of the working class, not as a lament, but as a guide to action. Dictatorship will not be stopped by appeals to the very institutions and parties that enabled it. It can be stopped only through the conscious political mobilization of the working class to take power, expropriate the oligarchy, and reorganize social life on socialist foundations as part of an international struggle. US imperialist bandits parade kidnapped Maduro in show trial. Andre Damon, January 5, 2026. In a degrading pseudo-legal farce, the Trump administration dragged kidnapped Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro and his wife Celia Flores before a federal court in Manhattan on Monday. When Maduro was asked to confirm his identity, he declared, quote, "My name is President Nicolas Maduro Moros. I am president of the Republic of Venezuela. I am here kidnapped since January the 3rd. He was allowed to get only a few words out before 92-year-old judge Alvin K. Hellerstein cut him off. Quote, "There will be a time and a place to go into all of this," he snapped. U.S. Deputy U.S. Marshals led him from the courtroom. Maduro declared in Spanish, quote, "I am a kidnapped president. I am a prisoner of war," end of quote. The hearing lasted just over 35 minutes. Both pleaded not guilty. Defense attorney Barry Pollack, who previously represented WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, announced he would challenge the legality of his client's, quote, "military abduction." Maduro, he said, is head of a sovereign state and entitled to the privileges that go with that. Flores bore the marks of the violence inflicted upon her during the abduction. The Telegraph reported that Flores, quote, "had visible bruises to her face, one the size of a golf ball on her forehead, red cheeks and what appeared to be a welt over her right eye." Her attorney, Mark Donnelly, told the court she had sustained, quote, "significant injuries during her abduction," and asked the judge to authorize an X-ray to determine whether her ribs were fractured. The day before, Maduro had been paraded through New York in a van with open doors. This is itself a war crime under international law, as it fails under the prohibition of, quote, "outrages upon personal dignity, in particular humiliating and degrading treatment." The Manhattan Federal Courthouse where Maduro appeared is the same courthouse where Jeffrey Epstein, a close associate of Trump, stood for his arraignment in 2019. Epstein was murdered in prison on August 10, 2019, in what the Trump regime calls a suicide. Maduro and his wife are being held at the Metropolitan Detention Center in Brooklyn, the same facility that once held former Honduran President Juan Orlando Hernandez, whom Trump pardoned just weeks ago despite his conviction for trafficking 400 tons of cocaine into the United States. The accusations against Maduro are not meant to be believed by anyone. Maduro was not kidnapped because he trafficked drugs. He was kidnapped because his country sits atop the largest proven oil reserves in the world, 303 billion barrels, and the gangster Trump wants them. Trump said so himself at Saturday's press conference, quote, "We're going to have our very large United States oil companies, the biggest anywhere in the world, go in, spend billions of dollars, and start making money for the country," end of quote. The Hill reported on Monday that Trump told oil companies about the assault on Venezuela before it happened, while not notifying Congress, let alone the American people. Quote, reporters at Air Force One asked the president if he spoke to American oil companies to tip them off before the attack, The Hill wrote. Trump nodded and said he spoke to the companies, quote, before and after the operation, and they want to go in, and they're going to do a great job for the people of Venezuela, and they're going to represent us well, Trump continued. The Trump administration has issued a list of demands to Venezuela's interim president, Delcy Rodriguez, who was sworn in Monday after Maduro's abduction. According to Politico, U.S. officials demanded that Rodriguez stop, quote, the sale of oil to U.S. adversaries. According to a U.S. official familiar with the situation and a person familiar with the administration's internal discussions, Trump threatened Rodriguez in an interview with The Atlantic, quote, if she doesn't do what's right, she's going to pay a very big price, probably bigger than Maduro, end of quote. Rodriguez initially responded to the seizure of Maduro defiantly, declaring on Saturday that, quote, there is only one president in this country and his name is Nicolas Maduro, and denouncing the U.S. operation as, quote, barbaric. But by Sunday, she had struck a more conciliatory tone, posting on Instagram that Venezuela sought, quote, peaceful coexistence and inviting the U.S. government to, quote, collaborate with us on an agenda of cooperation, end of quote. The State Department posted an image of Trump declaring, quote, this is our hemisphere. U.S. imperialism is claiming the whole of Latin America, along with Canada, as its property, making clear that it will kidnap or murder anyone who resists in a return to naked colonialism. While Maduro declared his innocence in a Manhattan courtroom, the United Nations Security Council convened an emergency session a few miles to the north, where the magnitude of what Trump's administration has unleashed became clear. This was not simply a travesty of U.S. criminal law and international law. This was an act of war targeting the entire world. The atmosphere at the UN was one of crisis. Which country would be next? The European Union, Russia, Canada, Colombia, Cuba, China? In the past month alone, Trump has issued direct threats against at least six UN member states. Venezuela's U.S. Ambassador Samuel Moncada accused the United States of attacking Venezuela in a bid to seize control of its oil resources, quote, a move that harks back to the worst practices of colonialism and neo-colonialism, end of quote. Colombia's representative stated, quote, there is no justification whatsoever under any circumstances for the unilateral use of force to commit an act of aggression. Such actions constitute a serious violation of international law and the United Nations Charter, end of quote. China's representative added, quote, China is deeply shocked by and strongly condemns the unilateral illegal and bullying acts of the US, end of quote. Economist Jeffrey Sachs, invited to brief the Security Council, placed the assault in context. Quote, in the past year, the United States has carried out bombing operations in seven countries, none of which were authorized by the Security Council and none of which were undertaken in lawful self-defense under the Charter, he said. The targeted countries include Iran, Iraq, Nigeria, Somalia, Syria, Yemen, and now Venezuela, end of quote. Sachs traced the history of U.S. regime change operations against Venezuela. The US-backed coup attempt in 2002, the funding of anti-government protests in 2014, the crippling sanctions that collapsed oil production by 75% and real GDP per capita by 62%, the unilateral recognition of Juan Guaido as interim president in 2019, and the seizure of $7 billion in Venezuelan sovereign assets. Quote, members of the Council are called upon to defend international law and specifically the United Nations Charter, Sachs declared. Members of the Council are not called upon to judge Nicolas Maduro. Even as condemnation poured in from around the world, the American press celebrated the act of imperialist banditry. The Wall Street Journal's editorial board railed against, quote, the international law illusion in Venezuela. Quote, declaring that, quote, rogue regimes now use it, international law, as a shield to protect their own law-breaking. The journal concluded, the demonstrations of U.S. nerve and military prowess will do more than 1,000 U.N. resolutions to protect the free world, end of quote. The Washington Post's editorial board was equally brazen. Its headline declared, quote, Maduro's arrest exposes legal fictions, with a subtitle adding, quote, the administration concocts a legal rationale for a foreign policy objective. That's okay. The Post openly declared that international law is a, quote, legal fiction. These editorials constitute open admissions that what the United States carried out was a crime, coupled with the declaration that American military power places it above the law. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres stated that he was, quote, deeply concerned that the rules of international law have not been respected, but such statements will not stop Trump's global military rampage. The capitalist powers that built the post-World War II legal order are now tearing it apart in their drive towards a new colonial carve-up of the world. Opposition must come from below, from the independent mobilization of workers in the United States, Venezuela, and internationally, against imperialist war and the capitalist system that produces it. Bold, audacious, stunning. A servile US media hails Trump's Venezuela war crime. Kevin Reed, January 5, 2026. Major US corporate news media have responded to the US military invasion of Venezuela and kidnapping of Nicolas Maduro in unison, celebrating the illegal act of imperialist aggression with words such as, quote, bold, audacious, daring, and stunning. This response, derived from White House talking points, reveals the news media as a direct instrument of imperialist colonialism and war propaganda. In the early hours of Saturday morning, U.S. forces launched what was publicly described as a, quote, large-scale assault on Venezuela, culminating in the seizure and removal of Maduro from the country in an operation coordinated with U.S. intelligence agencies. Multiple explosions were reported across Caracas as low-flying U.S. aircraft struck targets in and around the capital, while elite special operations forces penetrated the presidential security perimeter under cover of an American-engineered blackout of the city. According to the latest reports, as many as 80 people were killed during the operation, including civilians. The Cuban government has officially reported 32 Cuban military and intelligence personnel killed during the U.S. assault. The entire U.S. media has repeated the talking points of fascist Senator Tom Cotton, who appeared on the Sunday talk shows as a surrogate for Trump, to declare that Trump's attack on Venezuela was, quote, bold, audacious, direct action, end of quote. The response by the Washington Post, owned by Amazon billionaire Jeff Bezos, set the political and ideological tone for the entire corporate media. In its editorial, the Post hailed the invasion as, quote, a stunning demonstration of American resolve and a bold, tactically flawless operation that removed a tyrant long allied with hostile powers, end of quote. The Post praised Trump and the military high command for an operation of, quote, audacious reach and surgical precision, stressing that the action sent, quote, an unmistakable message to rival powers and to any government that, quote, defies U.S. security interests in the hemisphere. Not a single line in the Post editorial questioned the legitimacy of the action or raised the slightest concern that the United States had unilaterally violated the most fundamental norms of state sovereignty. Instead, the Post complained that the White House lacked a sufficiently elaborated, quote, post-Maduro plan to manage Venezuela's transition under de facto U.S. colonial control. Throughout the broadcast and print media, the vocabulary used to describe the operation was strikingly uniform, revealing a tightly coordinated propaganda campaign taking its line from CIA briefing documents. NPR called the operation, quote, an audacious and surprising move and a daring middle-of-the-night raid. ABC News described it as a, quote, stunning capture. CBS News reported on, quote, a stunning large-scale attack. NBC News called it, quote, the most audacious military operation of Trump's presidency. CNN described the military operation and Trump's subsequent press conference as, quote, extraordinary and remarkable. The National Review called the operation audacious and technically proficient, arguing it sends a powerful message to adversaries. Bloomberg headlined its coverage, quote, Trump reshapes world order with daring Venezuela raid. The Atlantic ran an article titled Trump's Audacious Success. The Los Angeles Times reported that Trump said the U.S. would, quote, run Venezuela after capturing Maduro in audacious attack, end of quote. Across his spectrum, the key adjectives bold, audacious, daring, stunning were endlessly recycled, while the language of law and references to colonialism and war crimes were completely absent. Not one of these outlets provided a historically or politically accurate description or referred to international law. The coordination between the media and the military went beyond cheerleading. According to reports by Semaphore, the New York Times and Washington Post, quote, learned of a secret U.S. raid on Venezuela soon before it was scheduled to begin Friday night, but held off publishing what they knew to avoid endangering U.S. troops. That is, the media was actively involved in covering up a war crime, making it an accomplice. The U.S. assault on Venezuela violates the most basic provisions of the U.N. Charter governing the use of force. The UN Charter was ratified by the US Congress on July 28, 1945, and signed into law by Harry Truman on August 8, 1945. It is considered part of US law under the Constitution's Supremacy Clause. Article 2, brackets 4 of the Charter prohibits, quote, the threat or use of force against the territorial integrity or political independence of any state, end of quote. A formula written precisely to outlaw the kind of armed intervention carried out by Washington in Caracas. The kidnapping of a sitting head of state, the bombardment of the capital, and the declaration that the United States will, quote, run Venezuela for an indefinite transition period, all constitute a frontal attack on Venezuela's territorial integrity and political independence. The Charter authorizes the use of force only in two narrowly defined circumstances: self-defense in response to an armed attack or collective action sanctioned by the UN Security Council. Neither condition exists in this case. In legal terms, the US government has carried out an unprovoked act of aggression, the supreme crime under international law, encompassing within it all other war crimes, and for which the Nazis were prosecuted at the Nuremberg trials following World War II. Additionally, the U.S. naval blockade of Venezuela constitutes an act of aggression under UN General Assembly Resolution 3314, which explicitly lists, quote, the blockade of the ports or coasts of a state by the armed forces of another state as aggression. The seizure of Venezuela's oil resources, which Trump openly declared as his objective, constitutes pillage under international humanitarian law. None of these issues are broached in the coverage in the print media or in the television broadcast media of the major networks, which are staffed by toadies passing as, quote, journalists, this an expression of class interests. First, the major networks and newspapers are owned and controlled by the same financial corporate oligarchy that supports the Trump administration and its foreign policy. These outlets do not cover imperialist operations from the outside. They are integrated into the state's ideological apparatus, briefed by the Pentagon and intelligence agencies, and align with Wall Street's demand for control of Venezuela's vast oil and strategic resources. Second, the propagandistic repetition of, quote, bold, audacious, daring, and stunning serves a specific ideological function to transform a crime into a spectacle of virtuosity. By saturating the public with admiration for the operation's, quote, tactical success, the news media seeks to preempt questions about its colonial character and legitimize the openly declared aim of placing Venezuela under U.S. control. The total absence of the phrase war crime from these reports is itself damning. Within the US corporate news outlets, legality is invoked only against the official enemies. When the US kidnaps a president and bombs the Capitol, the discussion shifts to a review of the, quote, flawlessly executed character of Operation Absolute Resolve. The adulation of the media is also aimed at muffling the opposition of the American public. Before the invasion, a Quinnipiac University poll found that 63% of voters opposed U.S. military action inside Venezuela, with only 25% in favor. Opposition was overwhelming among Democrats, 89%, and strong among independents, 68%, with a substantial share of Republicans rejecting the prospect of another U.S. war in Latin America. Subsequent polling highlighted by national outlets, including CBS, YouGov and CNN, also confirmed that a majority of Americans oppose the invasion and kidnapping, with skepticism towards the claim that such operations have anything to do with democracy or fighting drugs. This chasm between public opinion and media propaganda proves that the corporate press does not, quote, reflect public opinion, but regurgitates the strategic interests of the state and the billionaire class it serves. The opposition among millions of workers and youth towards the attack on Venezuela is the product of the past quarter century of imperialist wars that were all launched based on lies and bad man campaigns used to justify them. The 2003 invasion of Iraq was sold with fabricated stories about, quote, weapons of mass destruction and the demonization of Saddam Hussein. The destruction of Libya in 2011 was justified by lurid claims of impending massacres by Muammar Gaddafi. In every case, the corporate media repeated the official narrative, only to quietly and partially acknowledge years later that the wars had been based on falsehoods and had produced catastrophes measured in hundreds of thousands of deaths and entire societies laid waste. These experiences have left a mark on the consciousness of the American and international working class. The central lesson that must be drawn by workers and youth from the Venezuelan invasion and the media's reaction to it is that no opposition to war and dictatorship can be expected from the corporate press. The attempt to resurrect and extend the Monroe Doctrine, asserting US hegemony over the entire Western Hemisphere, necessarily means permanent war against the peoples of Latin America and escalating confrontation with rival powers, alongside an intensifying assault on the social and democratic rights of workers in the United States itself. The media's fawning coverage of the kidnapping of Maduro is a warning that the ruling class is tossing aside all legal norms in pursuit of global domination. Opposition must come from below through the independent political mobilization of the working class in the US, across the Americas and internationally, against imperialism and the capitalist system that breeds war. This requires the building of a new revolutionary leadership rooted in the struggles of the working class, armed with the lessons of history and based on the struggle for socialism. For these articles and more, go to the World Socialist website, wsws.org. For the World Socialist website, this has been Carol Diviak.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.